San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Good evening, everybody. Actually, it's just Richard. Joe's not here tonight. So Richard's going to do the show. Well, not by himself, because I've got a great guest. And I guess it's never a good thing for the football team in town when the baseball team in town scores twice as many, well, points or runs as the football team does. So, anyway, poor Charger fans. Everybody gets their hopes up. And then a game like that. But hey, there's still 13 games to go, and they are in first place. So don't lose hope. And my Padres won today 6-4, so after losing 40 games to get 19 wins, the Padres have now won 54 games while losing 40 games. So maybe next year, now that the O'Malley's on the team, it's going to be an exciting season next year because they've been playing really well for the last 3 months, which has been good to see. So anyway, tonight it's just myself with myself and Joel Grushkin, and we're going to be talking about something that I think is really important. It's called cost segregation, and this is really important for anybody who, as part of their business enterprise, owns real estate or is leasing real estate where they've made significant tenant improvements. And this show is all about improving your cash flow and your working capital. So that's really what we're talking about, even though it sounds like a really esoteric thing, cost segregation. We're talking about how businesses can improve their cash flow and have more working capital. So Joel Grushkin, welcome.
Thank you, Richard. Great to be here.
Thanks. And Joel, just tell us a little bit of background on yourself. I know you come out of the same industry I do, the CPA business, right?
Absolutely. About 12 years with one of the Big Eight firms, then Arthur Young & Company, now Ernst & Young. Spent some time in the home building industry and the development industry after that. Been in a variety of places and got involved in cost segregation about 8 years ago.
Did you enjoy life in the Big Eight?
It was a great place for a young guy to be.
That's a nice way of saying no.
No, actually,
I'm just kidding.
Actually, I spent a lot of time on the consulting side of the house. That's where I was the whole time, and got to do things at a young age at the boardroom level, and really got some great experience.
Yeah, I don't miss those days either. I was on the audit side, and I don't know. It was different back then than it is now. But I was glad to go the small firm route, I think. So give us a little bit more background. Where are you from? How'd you get into the accounting business? Why on earth would anybody want to become a CPA do that?
Basically, it was a situation where I really joined the firm to go into the consulting business. And had some corporate experience prior to that and had an opportunity to get involved in a whole lot of different businesses at one time. And it just so happened that a lot of what I ended up doing was dealing with real estate clients. Everything from big brokerage firms to home builders, developers of healthcare facilities, hotels, really across the spectrum.
And so if that's your background, you're in the right place if you're in Southern California.
Absolutely. Because, this is a great place for real estate, although we are seeing an awful lot of business in Texas these days.
Yeah, other areas are doing, I think, even better, but I know it's a really opportune time to buy real estate right now if you happen to have liquid capital. So cost segregation, let's just get down to the brass tacks. What on earth is cost segregation and why is it important?
Well, basically, as most people, if they've talked to their CPAs, most CPAs are still depraciating commercial real estate over 39 years. It's what we used to call straight-line depreciation.
It has to do with depreciation, okay.
Absolutely. And or if you happen to own residential property that you lease out, like apartment buildings, residential property is categorized as 27-and-a-half-year property.
Okay, so what a typical CPA does, because I see this all the time, a client will buy a building, to keep the example simple, say for $10 million, and the CPA will say, okay, 25% goes to land and 75% goes to building, and we'll take depreciation. Let's assume it's a commercial building. We'll take depreciation over 39.5 years on 75% of the $10 million, around $7.5 million. So they'll get, well, about 2.5% per year of depreciation for the next 39.5 years. That's usually what happens.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
And so how does cost segregation improve upon that?
Well, cost segregation gives you the opportunity to use an alternative method. And what that alternative method does is allows you to break the property down into the various elements that make up a building. And first, let's deal with things inside the building. There are a lot of things in a building that don't last 39 years. Everything from carpeting and specialty wiring, specialty lighting, various types of trim that are used within a building, only has typically a 5-year life. So why would you try to depreciate those over 39 years? You know you're going to have to replace a lot of those items. And it just doesn't make sense. And what we're really talking about is cash flow. Now, if we look at the exterior of the building, you've got walkways, driveways, landscape, drainage systems.
You may have security systems like gates.
Absolutely. Fencing. That all has a 15-year life. However, what the IRS says, you cannot automatically just decide on what those lifetimes are, what those dollar amounts are, without having a way to back up what those numbers really are. And that's really what cost segregation does.
So let's talk about a practical example. About 3 weeks ago, we had a great guest on the show named Greg Cook, who owns Stone Brewery. And Stone Brewery is building a new restaurant down in Liberty Station. And they're also going to someday fairly soon start breaking ground on a new hotel across the street from their restaurant facility in Escondido. Are those two good examples of kinds of properties that would be good for cost segregation? And if so, why?
Those are excellent examples. There are so many things that go into building out a brewery or building out a restaurant. There's a lot of specialty plumbing that has to go in. There's special power needs that have to be added to a building. Those things, when they fall into this specialty category, actually become personal property and will only typically have a 5-year or a 7-year life. And so rather than trying to depreciate those things over 39 years, you can completely depreciate those in the first 5 years. And it's all about cash flow.
So the bigger the depreciation deduction, the lower the taxable income, therefore the lower the amount of income tax that gets paid.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's all about cash flow and working capital. So Greg Cook, if you're listening tonight, I don't know who does your cost segregation, but if you need somebody good, we'll have Joel shout out his contact information later in the show.
We appreciate that.
So I'm in the CPA business, and I work with a lot of different CPAs, typically helping them do a better job of providing more value to their higher-end clients. And I would say about 90% of the CPAs I run into, Joel, aren't really familiar with cost segregation and its benefits. Do you see the same thing? And if you do, why is this the case?
Well, I think it absolutely is the case, and I think there are a couple of things. When cost segregation really first was uncovered, it came about through a couple of major tax court cases back in the mid-90s. And just after those tax court cases, the only people doing cost seg were the big four CPA firms, or maybe there were six back then in the mid-90s. But like most of the things the big six firms or big four firms now do, unless it was a huge trophy project, they didn't want to touch it. The fees were much too high, and so it really wasn't being used. And it wasn't until 2004 that the IRS actually guidelined the use of cost segregation and basically came up with guidelines that explain what it really is, who can do it, what needs to be done for it to be a compliant study. So it really took some time to get in the mainstream. The other key piece is cost segregation is not purely an accounting study. The building plans have to be broken down so somebody that can read blueprints can go through and look at it from the perspective of a cost estimator to really determine what the true costs are of the various elements of the building. And they have to finitely break those out.
So you're saying you can't just say, well, 3% would be windows and 2% would be what we did to the parking lot and 1% would be the fencing we put around the building. You've got to look at detailed plans or detailed budgets or construction budgets. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Actually, you can do it without construction budgets, but you have to have a way to break that down and get to the real cost data. The key with it is that just being able to say, you know, I know roughly what percentage of the building is, the IRS won't go along with that. You really have to be able to break it down to get into some finite detail and not just show what the cost was, but be able to show that there is something unique about what was done that makes it non-standard in the building and is especially there because of the nature of the business that I'm operating out of that building. That's what gives it that specialty class and allows you to accelerate it like personal property.
So that means at your company, for example, you aren't just CPAs, you have engineers or real estate experts?
We have real estate experts, we have CPAs, we have construction cost estimators, we have consulting engineers, because it you really have to be able to break the plans down and then match off the various items and tie it into what's allowable based on the tax code. So there's a confluence of skills, not just the tax background, but also that construction industry background.
How do you find those experts? I mean, I know most CPAs tend not to be experienced in real estate. So do you recruit out of construction companies, or what do you do? I'm just curious.
It's really a combination of things. A number of the people within our firm have construction industry experience. They were running projects, supervising projects. They have engineering backgrounds. The CPAs within the firm have been involved in the real estate industry from a development and construction industry standpoint.
And the experts that you hire, if you guys get audited, for example, let's assume you do a cost segregation study and the CPA who signs the tax return gets a letter a year later that you're being audited, is it imperative that you have both a CPA and a real estate expert? Because it seems to me like you need both resources to be able to do this work effectively in terms of substantiating with the IRS what the right answer is.
Absolutely. I think we're somewhat unique in that we have some people within the organization that have both skill sets that they've developed over time. But yes, if there is in fact an audit, we really have to have the people there that worked on that study, worked on that report.
Yeah, because I ran into a case recently where an engineering firm didn't have a CPA on staff, and that was sort of a turnoff for me because I thought, what if we get audited? Well, I was just actually looking out for myself, because if we got audited, it was going to fall back into my lap.
And absolutely, you don't want to be there.
I've got too much work to do already. So I thought I need to. Well, that's good to know. So I'm just curious, what got you interested in doing this?
You know, several years ago, I was approached by an investment banker friend that had come across a small firm down in Louisiana. And there was an individual that had some engineering in his background and was doing cost segregation and wanted to expand it and wasn't quite sure how to go about it. And having been involved in the development of a number of companies, I was asked to take a look at it, found it intriguing, spent quite a while doing due diligence on it because I'd been away from a lot of the day-to-day real estate issues, and particularly the tax side, and decided to do due diligence, talk to some very close friends of mine that are very senior financial guys in the real estate space here in town. And after that due diligence, realized it was real, and we looked at the way it was being marketed, and decided this really made some sense, and started to get involved and build out the organization.
Joel, I think I hear music in my ears. So we're going to take a break on It's Your Money and Your Life, talking here with San Diego's leading cost segregation expert, Joel Grushkin. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to It's Your Money and Your Life. So we have a couple of CPAs here just talking about really technical stuff, but it's really technical stuff that'll save you a lot of money. If you happen to own a business, or you own a piece of real property, or you had to pay a lot of money to do tenant improvements, And I'm here with Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives. And we have on the line Joel's partner, Kurt Gautreaux, who is he calling in from Louisiana? I know that's his home state. Kurt, can you hear us?
I can. Good evening.
Hey, where are you?
Hi, Richard.
How are you doing?
I'm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
You're in Baton Rouge. Okay. Did LSU win this weekend?
LSU won this weekend, but here in the land of Drew Brees, where the Saints are 0-3 and having a pretty rough year.
Well, don't worry. The Saints get to play the Chargers. Chargers had a rough day today.
So. But they did.
Yeah, they had a rough day today.
Very rough.
Interestingly enough, you asked about LSU. Stephen Rivers is Phillip's little brother. He's our backup quarterback
right.
here at LSU and probably will be starting either next year or the following year. So
okay.
we're looking forward to seeing him play.
Yeah, I hear he's going to be. I hear he's a really good quarterback, as is his big brother, Phillip. So, Kurt, thanks for calling in all the way from Louisiana. I know it's late there, so I hope this is not past your bedtime.
Not past my bedtime. Thanks for asking.
Were you able to call in for part of? I mean, did you hear part of the show already?
I did. Yes, I did.
Okay. Joel, if so, everybody knows, Joel and Kurt are partners. So, what Joel and I were talking about, I didn't want to bring you in until after the break. We were talking about IRS audit risk. Okay, here's my big picture question: if you do a cost segregation study, does it increase your audit risk with the IRS?
Our experience tells us it does not, and that is really based upon the national audit rate for 1040s is somewhere around 0.6%, which is 0.6%.
Yeah, in other words, less than one person for every 100.
That is correct. We find our cost segregation audit rate is much, much, much lower than 0.6%. It's probably about 1/10 of that. We also find typically those that own real estate, commercial and residential real estate, are high income taxpayers who are in who have a higher probability of audit anyway. So, you know, sometimes with all of their partnerships and business ventures, their risk of audit's pretty high. So if cost segregation is one of those items, we're never really sure if it's just lumped into the pool of high-risk audits as opposed to cost segregation really raising that bar.
Interesting. Hey, well, and while we've got you on the phone, can you tell us a little bit about your background? Because I got the opportunity to meet you. I was very pleased to be able to meet you about a month ago when you were in town, and I was really impressed with your background. But can you tell our listeners what it is that you've done in your career and why you got into this very specialized field?
Absolutely. My graduated from Louisiana State University, CPA, started with Arthur Anderson in New Orleans in oil and gas taxation. A lot of oil and gas business owners have a lot of cash and eventually migrate to real estate. That led me to real estate taxation. Some years later, I opened my own firm. Eventually, after about 20 years of being in the business, I pared that business down to about 20 real estate clients. Strictly was a CPA in public practice, primarily tax, who dealt with real estate developers. So it was a natural business cost segregation for those clients was natural. As we started to work with cost seg providers, look at cost segregation studies, I became very interested in the substantial cash flow and capital it generated for real estate developers. Took a look at the business and decided with people like Joel, it could be a really good business model that could really help owners generate lots of capital for their business to help them grow and expand. And that's really the background.
Interesting. So you were fairly specialized as a CPA, in other words?
I was very specialized in real estate taxation exclusively.
Yeah, that's good. I think the CPA profession is moving in the direction of specialization. I think the old-fashioned generalists are sort of retiring away, and I think that's a good thing for clients, especially higher net income or clients of you know higher net worth, because I think it's a very specialized field, whether we're talking real estate, estate planning, or anything else out there.
Prior to the break, one of the questions you asked Joel was, you know, 90% of the CPAs are not aware of this. I think that really leads to your issue of specialization. If you're a CPA that deals primarily in pension plans or some of the other specialized areas, cost segregation and real estate, if you do not have a lot of real estate clients, may be something that's just not very familiar, that you're not very familiar with, or as I learned when I was in tax practice, you just can't know it all, Richard. It's impossible.
No, it's impossible. I mean, with the tax changes that come in left and right, and we're going to have more of those probably in about a year, and new accounting pronouncements that come out about every other week, and now all of the foreign reporting regulations and requirements with regard to foreign assets. I don't know anybody even keeps up with their specialty these days. There's so much new stuff. But I love cost segregation, too, just because being situated here in San Diego, most of the people I run into tend to have a heavy emphasis on real estate. So very important stuff. So you guys, what's the best time to do a cost segregation study? Is it before I buy a building when I'm thinking about buying it? Is it after I buy it? Is it 5 years after I buy it? When's the best time?
I would say that it really covers all the points you issued mentioned, Richard, because we have a lot of clients, our larger clients, that get us involved before they build or before they acquire. And we will, once they have a property identified, they have an idea what they're going to pay for it, or if they're building a project, we'll run our numbers on their construction budget or on the new purchase price so that they get a better handle on what the depreciation will be and what their cash flow is going to be. So we can do it before, or we can do it right after a project is acquired, because they can then take advantage of the projected depreciation expense and lessen their needs for paying quarterlies.
So, I think I hear music in my ears again, so it's time to take a break. Joel and Kurt, can you hang on?
Yes.
All right, good. It's Your Money and Your Life. We're going to be right back after the 7:30 break. Thanks. We are back on It's Your Money and Your Life, and it's your working capital, too, if you know how to use cost segregation. Hey, I want to thank all of our sponsors. Our major sponsor, UBS, and in particular, Mr. Michael Quaranta and his partner, Drew Freitas. Also, Regents Bank, Sean Puckett, Steve Sefton, Rich Gaines and Family Legacy Legal. Rich has a big seminar coming up, I believe the second week of October. I think he's going to announce that as a guest for part of one of these shows very soon. So make sure you tune in for that. Carl Sheeler and Business Valuations Limited, the best business valuation expert on the planet. Again, another very specialized topic, much like we're talking about tonight with cost segregation. Jason Kruger, CPA and Signature Analytics in Solana Beach. Our favorite CPAs, Polito Epic and Associates. That'd be Paul Polito and Don Epic CPAs. And of course, our guest tonight is also one of our sponsors. That's Joel Grushkin, Kurt Gautreau at Cost Segregation Initiative. So, Joel, while I'm shouting out everybody's name and thanking them for helping us out on the show, how do people get a hold of you and Kurt, and what's your website address and your email and your phone number?
Website is www.costseganalyst.com, ANALYSTS.com, and phone is 858-922-1037.
858-922-1037. All right, before we went on break, Kurt, you're still there, right?
Yes.
We were talking about when is the best time to do cost seg. So let's assume that we have a listener listening to the show who says, gee whiz, 6 years ago, I bought a new commercial building for $15 million, and my CPA hasn't even ever mentioned the term cost seg. What on earth can I do now? Because I bought this thing 6 years ago. Can I still go back in time and recapture these benefits that I otherwise would have been entitled to if I would have done it on time?
We can. Actually, we can recapture all of the missed benefits. Joel spoke earlier of 5-year and 15-year depreciation. If Richards owned his building for 6 years, we have the opportunity in 2000 and let's call it now 12, before you file your 2012 return, if we perform a cost segregation study, you're able to catch up all of the 5-year depreciation that you've missed the last 5 years. 6 years and all of the 15 and 6 years of the 15-year depreciation that you've missed. We do not have to amend and cannot amend your previous year's tax returns. We actually file a form with the tax return, with your tax return for the entity that holds the real estate. It's a form 3115, and it's really it's to change your method in accounting. We refer to it as catching up those 6 previous years of depreciation that you missed. In this instance, we can generate literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of capital for real estate owners and investors by catching up this depreciation.
So again, that's a Form 3115. It's called Change in Accounting Method. Now, that's something, though, that the IRS office, I believe it's a national office, gets in advance of you actually doing the recalculation of depreciation, because they have to stamp it as approved, right?
This is one of those change in the methods of accounting for depreciation that has automatic approval. And several years ago, probably 10 years ago, the IRS instituted user fees or fees for filing for a change in method of accounting. When it comes to cost segregation, there are no user fees, no filing fees. We do not have to pay anything to the IRS. And it's automatic approval, which means it's we actually submit it to an address in, I think it's Utah, and not with the national office in Washington, D.C. And we also include a copy of that form with your tax return for the entity that holds the real estate. It's a very simple process. It's automatically approved. They call it automatic consent being granted, and no user fees, which is good for the commercial property owner.
So you guys help a lot of CPAs then, because if a CPA wasn't really familiar with this and this opportunity came up, you can basically do all of that work, give the CPA what they need in terms of the new depreciation and doing the a change of accounting method form, and the CPA can just basically take the final results and run with it, right?
We do. We assist CPAs. With my background as a tax preparer and a CPA for real estate developers, we assist CPAs all the way from issues that may revolve around cost segregation, which may be passive losses, it may be alternative minimum tax, all the way through this Form 3115. We can either provide a sample for some CPAs who prefer to prepare their own 3115, or in many cases we will prepare the 3115, send it to the CPA for review, let them look over it, make sure they're comfortable with it, so that they can get the client to sign one copy to send to the national office of the IRS, and then of course include a copy with the tax return.
So the neat thing is the economic benefit of doing a cost segregation study is in every case immediate. If you do it on time, you're getting more depreciation in the first year. If you do it late, you can still fix it by filing this Form 3115 and going back, and in 1 year, such as the current year, 2012, freeing up a larger depreciation deduction. So it's always an immediate benefit, correct?
It's always an immediate benefit. It can also be a benefit, for example, taxpayers or clients, real estate owners, can actually reduce their quarterly estimated payments. If I am in a situation where instead of having straight withholdings out of my W-2 to pay my taxes to the IRS, I'm making quarterly estimates in April, June, September, and January, and working with the CPA and knowing that these large deductions are coming, clients are able to not pay the IRS or substantially reduce their quarterly estimate to the IRS, which again puts that capital and that cash back in their pockets.
Yeah, that's key. So a question, of the cases that you work on, about how many, and I know you guys are going to have to estimate this, about how many, what percentage are done, shall we say, on time, and what percentage are done with some form of look back? That is to say, the work comes to you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years after the initial acquisition or the construction improvement. Is it 50-50, or is it usually done on time?
I think it's probably 50-50. It could get as high as 60% doing lookbacks and 40% new purchases or new acquisitions. It's important to remember that this applies to buildings that are not only newly constructed, but also to buildings that are acquired. If you, Richard, own a building and Joel and I form a partnership and that building's 10 years old and we buy that building from you, we are able to apply a cost segregation to that purchased building, as opposed to not just applying it to newly constructed buildings.
And there's one other opportunity that I think CPAs sometimes miss too, and that is out here in California when we get what's called step up in basis. Somebody passes away so we can start re-depreciating something. And at the first death, for example, if it's community property here in California and you own a medical office building or an apartment building, you get to step the tax costs up to the date of death value of that asset. And with regard to that increase in basis, assuming there is one, assuming you've owned this a long time, there will be one, new depreciation starts. So you can use cost segregation in that case as well, too, correct?
That is correct. You can use it upon death. You could use it if Richard and I own a building together and I jump up and decide to purchase your portion of the building, then I may get a step up on half of the building, and we can perform cost segregation studies on those steps up and basis in those instances as well.
So about the only time I could see not doing this would be if you happen to buy a building where you're thinking about only owning it for a couple or 3 years, because I guess the only downside of more rapid depreciation is if you sell it again, you have to recapture the depreciation faster. But I don't know that that would even slow me down there necessarily, because I don't think anybody can predict the future that well. I don't see why anybody wouldn't do this, even if they don't think they're going to own the building for 10, 15, 20 years.
I agree. I think you have to look at what you're going to save, the money you're going to put in your pocket. Because we perform a cost segregation study in the first 3 years, as opposed to what fee you may pay to have that study performed.
I've worked with you guys. I think your fees are eminently reasonable. I mean, can you tell our listeners about the average cost of a cost segregation study? I know you have to be a little bit overly general to do that, but what's the average cost?
Sure. Go ahead, Joel.
Well, I would say that the average cost, let's actually talk about it another way. When we look at the cost of doing the study on an after-tax basis versus the net tax benefits achieved from a study, it is very rare that the benefits would be less than 10 to 1 as opposed to the cost. As property, and that's a building that's maybe a million, $2 million building. As the buildings get bigger, the values increase, or the complexity and type of building changes, then we are in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50 times the actual cost of the study.
Yeah, I don't even consider it a cost because the benefit is so huge. It's not even a cost. It's, when you apply cost benefit to it, you would say, well, obviously I would do this every time I have the opportunity to do this. And
it's relatively inexpensive capital. When you compare that 10 to 50 times return on your money, look at that as capital you can retain in the business, because as we know as CPAs, Richard, most of the business owners either distribute money to themselves to pay their taxes to the IRS or let the business pay the taxes on their behalf directly to the IRS. So if we're not required to make that distribution from the business to the owner to pay those taxes, the money in essence stays in the business. It's akin to retained capital as opposed to borrowed capital. So one may want to compare it to what am I paying on an annual basis in interest or cost of these funds, as opposed to a one-time fee for a cost segregation study.
Yeah, well, first of all, your expense is tax deductible by the taxpayer, so the government's already paying for part of it. But then secondly, hey, cash flow is king these days. I mean, it's all about working capital for businesses and real estate owners, because we learned that 4 years ago in this crash. I mean, it is all about working capital these days. Hey, we have to take our last break, and then we'll be right back on It's Your Money and Your Life. Stay with us. Hey, they're playing The Office, and I'm the family office guy. They're playing my song. Hey, how much fun can you have with cost segregation? We're having a lot of fun with it. Hey, I want to ask you guys two more questions about cost segregation. First is restaurant improvements. We used to just take 15-year life, but now I understand that we can't really do that unless we have a cost segregation study that actually breaks out components. Is that right? So if you're constructing a fast food or a restaurant location, am I correct on that?
Yeah, you are correct. That changed in the last year, I believe it was, Kurt. And now you really, if you're going to do anything but 39-year, you have to have a study done to back it all up.
I think 2 points. When the recession first hit, as part of an incentive for people to open businesses and move into existing real estate. There were qualified restaurant improvements, qualified leasehold improvements that we were able to take, or our clients were able to take, for improvements that they've made to real estate over a 15-year period. Those expired on December 31st, 2011. So no longer, if you make leasehold improvements to a property, if you make leasehold improvements to a retail space, or if you make leasehold improvements to a restaurant space, can you amortize or write those expenses off over a 15-year period? We now must write them off over a 39-year period. The other significant thing that's happened in the tax law in regards to cost segregation in the last year is on December 23rd, 2011, the IRS issued guidance for what we'll call repairs and maintenance versus capitalizing these sorts of improvements.
Yeah, I read about that. Let me ask you a specific question and try to make this clear. So let's assume that I bought a building and I didn't do any cost seg, and so everything was under 39.5. And let's assume after 2 years, I didn't notice this in my due diligence. My roof was basically done for, and I had to put a whole new roof on the building. Is this an opportunity then to be able to isolate after the fact how much I can expense when I bought the thing because it didn't last 39.5 years by properly doing the work now? Does that make sense, my question?
It does. Previously, tax professionals and CPAs relied upon an old court case, the Campbell case, in which we looked at a roof and said if the new roof has not increased the fair market value of the building or extended its life, then we're able to treat that roof as a repair and maintenance. With the new IRS guidance on December 23rd of last year, that roof now must be capitalized and depreciated over 39 years, unless we've performed a cost segregation study on the building. If we've performed a cost segregation study on the building, the new rules allow something CPAs have never been able to do, and that is to look at the old roof. When you purchase the building, you bought walls, slab, and a roof. You just happen to have it all lumped up into one number.
Right.
If through a cost segregation we take those numbers and break them down, we are now able as tax preparers to write off the cost of our old roof, which is sort of a trade-off for having to capitalize and depreciate the new roof over 39 years. So it's a huge change. It applies to improvements, whether we've made them better, which is betterment, whether we've restored them, which is your example of a new roof, or whether we've adapted them to a new and a different use. For example, we've expanded it, or we've created new space. The other thing I want to make sure I mention, Richard, for the listeners is, if you and Joel own a building and your tenant moves out and Kurt decides to rent that space and we all agree amongst us that you're going to make improvements to that building, you're going to tear out old walls, you're going to tear out carpet, you're going to tear out ceiling tiles, you're going to move around some HVAC equipment. If you and Joel have identified the cost of those walls and the wiring and the ceiling tiles and the HVAC system, you're able now, before I move in, to take all of those costs that we think of as writing off in 39 years. And when your new tenant moves in, you're taking all that stuff you ripped out and you can now write that off in the current year. That's under these new guidance, the new guidance from the IRS. That we received last December, and it makes a cost segregation study that much more important to be able to identify those costs and break them out of that one big number.
Absolutely, that's huge. And let me just throw out some other things that I find breaking down in buildings. You mentioned HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning. Plumbing systems, do it all the time. Electrical systems, elevators and escalators. We see a lot of those out here in San Diego. Alarm systems, fire protection systems, and security systems. Gas distribution systems. So there's all, I mean, the roof was merely an example. There's all kinds of things that don't last 39.5 years. We just have to pay attention to what's going on with our buildings to be able to take advantage, I think, of this great opportunity. Oh my goodness, I hear music already. Time flies when you're having fun. Kurt Gautreaux, Cost Segregation Initiatives, his partner Joel Grushkin here local in San Diego. Gentlemen, really appreciate you being on the show tonight.
Richard, thank you very much. We enjoyed being here.
And anybody listening where we've saved you hundreds of thousands of dollars, just call me on my cell phone. I'll give you my mailing address for my commission check for all the money I've saved you. Anyway, thanks for listening to It's Your Money and Your Life. We are out of time, but we will be back next week right here on 760 AM KFMB. Everybody have a great week. Take care.
Came up with a saying, put your money where your mouth is, must have had some dental work done. Just a filling can cost over $100. And other procedures like crowns and root canals can cost you hundreds more. Without dental insurance, you could be putting a lot of money where your mouth is. Fortunately, you can get dental insurance for less than a dollar a day. This isn't a discount plan. This is real dental insurance that can cover over 300 procedures. Everything from cleanings and fillings to crowns and dentures. For free information, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company, 1-800-600-2293. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies no matter what your situation, even if you're retired or on Medicare. Plus, you can see any dentist you choose and never have to pay a deductible. Get the coverage you need for less than a dollar a day and put less money where your mouth is. For details and free information, call now, 1-800-600-2293. 1-800-600-2293.
We follow the story. You get attacked.